Look forward to that as well, all right?
I will.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to call the April 20th, 2020 meeting of the Bertie County Board of Commissioners to order. I'm so delighted that so many of you are joining us by Zoom. You know, these are unusual times, certainly. And in unusual times, we have to do unusual things to make sure that we stay connected. So I'm so delighted that so many of you will be able to join us by Zoom and be a part of the meeting with us. We will have our citizens' comment section near the end of the meeting. You can simply send your comments to Sarah, our clerk, and she will make sure that they are made to us, the board, and we will respond. You are on mute, with the exception of our two commissioners. Commissioner Bazemore and Commissioner Trent are joining us by Zoom. And so they are on, and they are unmuted, so they can join at any time if they have comments to make. All right? So with that, I would like to ask Commissioner Lee to give us an indication and the Pledge of Allegiance.
Our gracious Heavenly Father, we do thank you for this day that you've given us. And Lord, we thank you for the rain to help the crops grow, Lord. Lord, as we go throughout this evening's business, the county business, we just pray that you'll give us wisdom and discernment, Lord. We pray that everything that is said and done will be pleasing unto you. And Lord, I pray especially for our country and especially for Bertie County that this virus, that we all use wisdom when we have to leave our homes, and Lord, that this virus will not affect us to the extent that it has in a lot of places in this country. And Lord, we'll give you all the praise in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Let's join in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Lee, for that invocation. Very, very timely words and on this occasion. So we're going to go right into our meeting. And the very first thing under the appointments and reports section of our agenda is our swearing in of our new county manager, Juan Vaughn II. He's going to be sworn in by the Honorable Ms. Annie F. Wilson, who is the Register of Deeds.
Okay. Good evening, everybody. And it is a pleasure to be here on this evening to be a part of such a great celebration. I commend Mr. Vaughn for a job well done thus far, to the Board of Commissioners for accepting him. And I was a part of your hiring process, so I feel good to know that now I have the honor of swearing you in. So, if you're ready, I will now read this, swear you in, and you will repeat, say your name and repeat after me. Okay.
I, Vaughn II,
do solemnly and sincerely swear,
do solemnly and sincerely swear,
that I will support the Constitution,
support the Constitution
of the United States,
of the United States,
that I will be faithful
and bear true allegiance
to the state of North Carolina
and to the constitutional powers
and authorities that are
or may be established
for the government thereof
and that I will
endeavor to support
maintain and defend
The Constitution.
The Constitution.
Of said state.
Of said state.
Not inconsistent with.
Not inconsistent with.
The Constitution.
The Constitution.
Of the United States.
Of the United States.
To the best of my knowledge.
To the best of my knowledge.
Skill and ability.
Skill and ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
I,
Juan Juan II.
Do swear.
Do swear.
That I will.
That I will.
Well and truly execute.
Well and truly execute.
The duties of.
The duties of.
County manager.
County manager.
According to the best.
According to the best.
Of my skill and ability.
Of my skill and ability.
According to the law.
According to the law.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr.
Thank
Long.
You. Thank you.
Congratulations, County Manager Vaughn. I think the little one knows what you have ahead of you. She tried to warn you. Our new County Manager Vaughn is here with his lovely wife, Austin, and his little one. And they are both looking gorgeous today, I want to tell you. Thank you both for being with us, being with our new manager. We're signing all the papers now. We're making it official. And just so everybody knows that Mr. Vaughn became our county manager effective at the first of this month, but he's actually only being sworn in today. So April 1st, he became effective as our county manager, and this is his swearing in today. All righty. Thank you. Thank you so much. Next on our agenda, just to give our clerk a little bit of heads up, we're going to have our Corona Pandemic update from our Emergency Services Director, Mitch Cooper. And after Mitch, Dr. Michael Lowry is going to come in and give us a little update as well. So, Sarah, whenever Mitch is ready.
Hello, Mr. Chairman.
Hello, Mitch. How are you, sir?
And good evening to the rest of the commissioners.
Good evening.
Quick update on Corona for Burke T. County's response. Earlier today, we sent out an update that we have 25 cases that have been counted for Burke T. County, and 10 of those are still active. We've got 14 patients that have recovered, and, of course, we've had the one death that we had to sadly report. On the good news for coronavirus, the Three Rivers has tested the remainder of their population, and they have all tested negative other than the two that we've found. Public health is working right now on logistics to test all of their employees. Our EMS workers are still pushing hard on the SC2 protocol, and we appreciate all the help from the Sheriff's Department Communication helping us screen all the 911 calls. Now we'll take a quick update from our medical director on his standpoint as far as coronavirus.
Hello, Dr. Lowry. How are you, sir?
Yes, sir. Doing fine. Doing fine. Thanks for the opportunity to talk with everyone here. From the hospital's perspective, overall the census is actually down in the emergency department. A lot of this is people are looking at following up with their regular practitioners for their standard care and for their medication refills. And I've got to say the public in general is trying to avoid the emergency department due to the risks inherent with it. And so we're probably seeing about a 30% reduction overall in the volume that we're observing locally at the hospital and then also system-wide. From a testing perspective, the only way I can see getting ahead of this is to increase the testing so we can follow the numbers and follow the people that are afflicted with the coronavirus and prevent the spread. Right now there are three versions of tests which are available. There is a rapid test which turns around in about an hour, and that is one that is right now being reserved just for patients being admitted into the hospital, because we have to determine whether or not they go in an isolation room or into a standard room where there's precautions but not the full airborne precautions and negative pressure and some of the other aspects. There's a test that's a 12-hour turnaround test, which is what we are reserving for healthcare providers, such as our fire and EMS and police professionals that may have symptoms and were concerned about spread to the public. Also, this would be extended out to people that are working in nursing homes, nurses, other healthcare providers that we can't have them working if there's any potential for them to have coronavirus. And then there's also the other test, which is a slower turnaround test that gets sent off to either LabCorp or Quest Diagnostics, which can take anywhere from 3 days up to 9 days. That's for patients that are not going to be admitted, that can be basically sent home and kind of put on quarantine until a result comes back. Right now, Vidant Health System across all their hospitals is getting about 1,000 tests per week that they're running through their system, but they're hoping by the end of this week they may be able to double that number and you know, to be able to get more of the rapid tests and have them more available so we can better follow the spread of coronavirus and kind of determine where it's headed to next. Definitely, if there's any questions, I can answer. I can go on about the coronavirus at length for long periods of time, but I don't want to take up the entirety of your meeting. One other point that I do want to bring up is that studies are showing that there are people that are what they call asymptomatic carriers of it that ended up getting the coronavirus but showing no symptoms whatsoever. And that's why it's making it so difficult to follow the symptoms and follow the disease because, you know, there are people that have gotten no symptoms. And it ranges from some studies in China showing as low as 5% of the population having no symptoms up to some studies in Iceland and in Europe and even more recently now out in California showing that the asymptomatic carriers could be up to 30 to 40% of the people that actually have it. Some estimations, you know, what we know of through our testing of what our theoretical numbers are, some say that we could be looking at, you know, we're in North Carolina, for instance, stating that there's 6,500 cases. Some say that there could be a multiplier effect that anywhere from 20 up to 85 times that number of people could actually have it and not realize it, never have gone in for testing, might have been asymptomatic or could have thought it was just their standard seasonal allergies related to the pollen in the air. But I know that's not very reassuring to hear.
Well, thank you, Dr. Lowry. I want to open it up to the commissioners, the three here plus the two on the phone, if they have any questions for you. But first, I want to say to our Emergency Service Director, Mitch, we really appreciate the job that you and your staff have been doing. You've been excellent at trying to keep citizens informed and keep us informed on not just a daily basis, but almost an hourly basis, and we really appreciate that. But Dr. Lowry, one of the questions that I get most often from citizens is, if I think that I may have been infected, you know, what should I do? And we've been telling them that you should first contact your health care provider, right, first, to seek advice from that. And if you don't have a health care provider, per se, then, you know, if you think you really may be impacted, then you should perhaps contact the hospital, emergency department, et cetera. What are your thoughts there?
Yes, it depends upon what the degree of symptoms are. There are hotlines that you can call to discuss what the symptoms are, what the risk factors are, and they will give you guidance to come in for testing or to stay at home and quarantine at home. And more recently, a person in Bertie County that I diagnosed this past week was in regular contact with the this hotline, and it wasn't until her symptoms had progressed where there was some concern where she came in to be evaluated and ended up being admitted. The issue being that if you are hypoxic or if you're having having a hypoxic is a low oxygen level, or you're having significant chest pain, or you're basically too weak to kind of function at home, you definitely need to go into the hospital for supportive care. Also, having chest pain, other types of symptoms. But the reality of it with coronavirus, other than supportive care, which is basically, kind of providing you oxygen, controlling fever, giving you IV fluids if you need it, there is no approved actual antidote for it. The antiviral medications studies are not panning out. The Plaquenil, that was advocated even up as far as the president was stating it may be a cure. Actually, people ended up having more issues with their heart, and so they're stating that that's not something to give people. So if the symptoms are severe enough, then yes, I would go in to get checked and evaluated. If the symptoms are not severe, I would try to quarantine at home. And I know that sounds kind of difficult from the standpoint where we're used to getting our rapid flu tests and our rapid strep tests, but it's just right now we do not still at this point have the testing capabilities to be able to diagnose people, but much less to treat everybody. And treatment on an inpatient setting might actually be worse. The worst thing you can do with any type of respiratory illness is try to stay in bed. The more you get up and expand your lungs, the less likely you are to get a bacterial pneumonia or a worsening viral pneumonia, which coronavirus, of course, would be the viral type. So if someone is, if they think they're exposed, they may have symptoms, if they are elderly on chemotherapy, or if they are, having significant shortness of breath or having chest pain and are extremely, extremely symptomatic, recommendation would be to come in and get tested for it.
Thank you, Dr. Lehrer. I think that's consistent with the information that we've been hearing and providing to citizens in our alerts as well. I wanted to open it up to the rest of the board, including our two commissioners on the line, if there are any additional questions.
Just one. This is Commissioner Lee. Do you have a approximate date of when we might see some antibodies test come out?
They are arguing they have antibody tests that are out. When they're going to be available for widespread distribution is going to be the question. For widespread distribution, the thought is going to be probably several months. And the antibody tests, basically, there's the rapid molecular tests that determine if you currently have it or very recently have had it. The antibody test would, show that you have had it previously, in the past, and may have some immunity to it. But even at that point, there's quite a bit of argument as to whether or not if you do get the coronavirus and develop antibodies that we can measure, does that even prevent you from getting it again? And the coronavirus is already, we've been seeing coronavirus for years and years. It's just this is a strain of it that is more highly virulent and it's got significant ramifications with damage to the lungs and subsequent damage to the kidneys, liver, and also the heart. To go and get the testing for the antibodies even if you are positive for the antibody to the coronavirus, the question is, are you positive for the antibody for the dangerous strain of it that we're following? And even from the standpoint of the dangerous strains, they said it's already mutated, and there's about 8 different splinters of the coronavirus which are out there from this original strain that seemed to originate from Wuhan, China. And so I don't know if that's going to actually end up being the solution that we're truthfully going to have on it. There's a lot of discussion about a vaccine and how quickly they can develop one. I think there's a lot more promise with that than anything. And the normal vaccinations, the process is to get one through testing and everything else. At the absolute minimum, it takes 18 months. Most of the time, it's on the magnitude of 3 to 5 years to get a vaccine and test it and to go through all the processes with it. We're, of course, trying to fast-track it. There's federal money and even private money that's been put towards it. But I think that is going to probably have a lot more promise in the long term to try to eradicate this. Because my concern is, yes, we are flattening the curve, but flattening the curve does nothing more than kind of protect the healthcare system from overloading their ICU beds, similar to what happened in Italy, where they were literally having to cut life support off the 70-year-old, and then it went down as low as age 60-year-old, just based upon age, to give a ventilator to somebody who was younger and might have had a better chance of surviving it. But in flattening the curve, it's going to end up being around longer. And what will happen is it may subside in some areas where it's going to crop up in other areas. And I don't see a quick turnaround to this short of having a vaccine.
Great. Dr. Lowry, thank you. Any other questions? From what question here from Commissioner Atkins. Mitch, Commissioner Atkins has a question for you. Are you still there on the line?
Yes, sir.
Mitch, has there been any problems that you're having trouble dealing with the non-emergency transport?
Mr. Chairman, can you relay that? I can't hear you.
Yeah, he said, any problems with non-emergency transport related to the pandemic?
No, we're making sure that all of the bus and the providers that are in the county have the proper PPE. We have seen a drop in our call volume because of non-essential transports and certain doctor's visits. But as far as getting to critical care like dialysis, if a patient has a suspected case or is positive, the Dallas centers have identified centers across the state that they can go to be treated. We have been transporting as far as Raleigh to make sure that those patients receive the proper treatment. But that's the only logistical issue that we've seen. But as far as the PPE and all right now, we've got a good working relationship with the state, and they're providing what we need. We sent an email to all the providers outside of, that are private, and they call us and tell us what they need. We get an order for it. And usually when we get the order done within the day, we're in Greenville picking it up and have it back in the county.
Great. And Mitch, I think you can attest to this, that we have been in touch with most of our major employers here in the county. I mean, we just checked this evening today with the correctional facility here to make sure that how they were doing, and they have not had any confirmed cases either by inmates or by employees. That's great. And we've also had conversations with Purdue, and they've even submitted their guidelines to us in terms of how they're trying to make sure of the safety and cleanliness of the facility in every respect that they can. So they have had no confirmed cases at Purdue either. So that's great. Commissioner Bazemore, Commissioner Trent, any questions for either Mitch or from Dr. Lowry?
Mitch, No.
Okay?
No.
Great. Thank you both. Thank you, Dr. Lauer, especially. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
Next.
And if you have any other question at any other time, my phone number is 252-342-3363. If there's any question or concern which comes up related to this, feel free to call me at any time.
Great. Thank you, sir. And Mitch, I know you'll be on the call to our conclusion in case there are any questions from citizens during the citizens' comments. We'd like you to still be here for that as well. All right?
Yes, sir. I'll be right here.
Great. Next on our agenda is the Berkeley County Library and Cooperative Extension Facility Update by Amber Idol and Danny Hoff. Sir, both Amber and Danny on the phone?
Yep, I just unmuted.
Welcome.
And Amber is unmuted as well.
Welcome, ladies.
Hello. Thank you for having us tonight.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
So how are we doing?
So Amber, okay.
We're pretty
good.
Amber,
how about go ahead.
Yes, I'm going to start with giving a progress update on the project itself. We just had our monthly meeting for April last week. And so we got a good update from the contractor. In the past 30 days, they've finished about 95% of the steel that you can see from the road, except for the light gauge metal trusses, which should begin soon. They finished the metal stud framing on the exterior and on the interior. So all the walls on the interior have been framed up. The plumbing rough-in overhead and in-wall has begun. The mechanical overhead rough-in has also begun. And the electrical in-wall rough-in have begun. The low TPO roof on the cooperative extension section of the building has begun, which has a parapet on it, but that whole roof has been completed. The wood decking that'll go on the library portion of the building is on site and is waiting to be installed, kind of waiting on the weather. It's been pretty rainy. They have started priming and done the first coat of paint on the interior steel, which is a blue, so you'll be able to see that from the road. They have started installing the green dense glass around the building. And in the next 30 days, they'll complete that dense glass installation. They'll finish priming and first coat of paint on all the structural steel. They will begin the wood decking. They will begin the mezzanine floor pour, the concrete pour, which they may have already done. They were waiting on the weather for that as well on Friday. And the mezzanine stairs will also be installed.
So to date, as of the meeting last week, where the contractor reported 45% work in place. That is right in line with the percentage that they're billing at right now. So that's a good sign. Comparing it to the contract duration, we're 57% of the contract duration. So you can see that they're about 10% behind as far as work in place compared to their contract duration. Some of the delays, if we look at it in how many days we're talking about, that is right now that's about 45 days behind schedule. Despite that, we have about 19 days pending currently in change orders. I think 12 of those days were related to weather days that they're asking for, from the start of the project through the end of February. And I think those are days that we've reviewed with Juan and the other members of the project team. And so I think right now we're just getting the backup information needed from NOAA, the National Weather Service, to back up the 5-day or 5-year average so that we can process that change order. Once that change order goes through, they'll be 26 days behind. We expect that there will be some weather days for March and April as well. But those will be coming probably in the next month or two, so we can report back on that once we know more. So the 26 days that we're behind right now, I think there's several reasons why that's the case. Initially, we had a slow start to our steel process. We had a lot of back and forth with the shop drawings, making sure we got all the details right, coordinating with the contractor to make sure everyone was on the same page. And then about mid-March is when we started seeing some hints of delays related to the COVID-19 crisis. The contractor reported to us that they are having limited staff on site, and this is mostly due to things beyond anyone's control. It seems like a lot of the subcontractors are making decisions for their own companies to limit how many people they're sending out, to limit how many people are actually on the construction site at any one time, to try and limit the amount of spread that's occurring for the virus. So that's a good thing, you know, to help in this way the spread of the virus. But on the other side, it also is slowing things down a bit on site. So the way that we are tracking this with the contractor, they are heavily documenting delays that are directly associated with the national emergency versus the delays that are associated with weather versus days that are associated with normal construction activities like the steel delays. So at this point, it's really hard to exactly quantify how much of each delay is what, because they're all kind of tied together. So we are working on it with the contractor and pressing them and their subs to give us the documentation that we need to make sure that everything is being tracked appropriately. And then once we have more information, we will absolutely share it with everybody so that we can differentiate in those 26 days how much of it is the COVID-19 versus how much of it is weather versus how much is actual construction delay. We know that AR Chessman is working very hard to get as much on schedule as they possibly can. They're having as many people on site as they can. Steve, the superintendent out there, is there every day. So as soon as we get more information about how to process all these the delays and the different reasons, we will pass that along to you.
Okay, Danny and Amber, are there any comments or questions from commissioners here or on the phone? Danny and Amber, I can tell you that excuse me, Commissioner Trent, is that you?
No,
I'm sorry. I thought I heard somebody coming through. Danny and Amber, you know, I think you've certainly been keeping the county manager and his staff direct on the committee kind of updated on this, but it's great to have you on the phone so citizens can hear the status. They're the ones paying for this, so we'd like to make sure we keep them informed. So I think we'd like to continue to invite you guys to our meeting so you can give us an update on some kind of regular basis as to where we stand. And I think being able to do it by Zoom and not
being happy to do that.
Right. And being able to do it by Zoom and not having to physically come here, I think is the best way to continue to do that. But we appreciate the update. We know there have been a few issues, but we're hoping that you know, things will subside so that we can get this project done. It's the number one project on our list right now, so we want to make sure that this is moving along swiftly.
Yes.
Great. Great.
We'll keep you updated. Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Great. All right, everybody. Next thing we do have one board appointment today, and that board is to JCPC. And we have one applicant for that position, and she is here with us right now in the room. She just swore in our county manager. And this applicant is from Ms. Annie F. Wilson, the Honorable, our Register of Deeds, who has expressed interest in becoming our appointee to JCPC. So to the board, what is your pleasure?
I make a motion. We accept her application to be a part of the JCPC committee or board.
Moved by Chairman Lee. Is there a second? Second by Chairman Atkins. Any discussion? Hearing none. The floor is opened for vote. All those in favor of appointing Annie F. Wilson, the Honorable, to JCPC Board, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Ayes have it. Ms. Wilson, thank you. Thank you for being willing to serve.
Yes, thank you.
We're going on to our consent agenda. I'd like to take the items here in a few groupings. The first thing is our minutes, approved minutes for regular session 220, minutes for the work session 218, closed session minutes 218, approved emergency meeting minutes 326, approved minutes of our special meeting on 330. Those 5 minutes on the agenda I'd like to take under one motion if possible. What is your pleasure?
I'll make a motion. We approve consent agenda items 1 through 5.
Motion made by Commissioner Lee. Is there a second? Second by Commissioner Bazemore. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving minutes listed on the agenda 1 through 5, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay? Ayes have it. Thank you. We also have here, yes. Oh, our register.
Can we vote?
Yes, but we can't admit. We're discussing that. Yeah. The question was made whether or not those on the phone could vote. We are saying yes, commissioners on the phone can vote. However, our instructions tell us that the votes of those present, a quorum here at commissioner's room, actually must be counted to pass a motion. However, unless there is a not a unanimous decision, we have 3 here who've made that and discussed that briefly with the attorney before then, so that's what we're following. Okay? Reasonable?
I'm confused. I don't know if it matters a lot. Can you vote by phone or not?
Well, that is debatable. Our association has told us that, yes, under certain circumstances, they believe that you can vote by phone, Commissioner, if you identify yourself, if you confirm that you are that person and that security is in place. However, the general instructions tell us, as advised, that you must be present here to count your vote. So I think we have both of those things here. We have 3 present who have voted yes for every item so far, and we've been unanimous. So it's a little bit of a
moot
point.
My concern is that she seconded that. She went on the record as a second.
Okay.
It's my biggest thing.
Commissioner Bazemore, did you hear that? I'd like to,
yes.
If you don't mind, have that accept that second from Commissioner Atkins, since he is here present. Is that okay with you?
No.
It's not okay with you?
No. That's not what I was told. But for time's sake, yeah, just go with it, and we'll take it up later.
Thank you very much. We discussed this a little bit. At least I did with the attorney. There are 2 points of views on this. I'll leave it to the legal folks to work that out. But our general guidelines tell us that you must be here present to vote. Now, I know the association telling us something different, but again, we'll let the legal work that out. So thank you. Commissioner Atkins, will accept your second to that motion. That's okay with you.
Just let me say for the record, I don't have any problem with Commissioner Bazemore's second. I just want to make sure that we were doing
it. Oh, absolutely.
Correct.
Just need to be legal.
I don't have any problem with voting. I just want to make sure we were
That's correct. I wanted them to vote because I wanted to know if there are any objections, anything that we should hear from them or consider from them. We should take that under consideration,
yes.
Right? Okay, great. So we did vote, and it was passed unanimously. The next thing is the approval of the Register of Deeds Fees report for March, and I also want to take the Tax Release Journal for March 2 as one vote, item 6 and item 7. What is your pleasure?
I make a motion. We approve items 6 and 7 on the consent agenda.
Okay, it's been moved by Commissioner Lee, second by Commissioner Atkins, that we approve the Register of Deeds report and the Tax Release Journal, or consider those. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Nay? Ayes have it. Thank you. Next is item 8, which is to approve the County Manager's Employment Agreement. Now, I know all of you who are commissioners are aware and have seen that employment agreement since we all went over it and helped write it. This is a public record document for any citizens who would like to see that employment agreement, it is available for you to see it. I don't think you'll see anything strange or unusual. It is a standard employment agreement that we've used with prior county managers, but it is available there for your inspection. So the floor is now open for movement in to this matter.
I make a motion we approve the county manager's employment record, and we're glad to have it.
Been moved by Commissioner Lee, second by Commissioner Atkins. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of approving the employment agreement for Commissioner Vaughn, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Commissioner Vaughn, not only do we welcome you as a county manager, but we officially approve your employment agreement. Okay? So now you can cash that check. Okay. And the last thing on our consent agenda is the last item, approve a contribution and proclamation for the American Cancer Society's Relay for Life 2020. I think all of us are very familiar with Relay for Life, and this community has responded over the years so impressively for Relay for Life. We've been first in the nation many, many times, if not first, then a close second. But this community has responded tremendously to this, and the county has supported this. So, Commissioners, what is your pleasure?
Make a motion we approve the proclamation for American Cancer Society Relay for Life, Berkeley County 2020.
Moved by Commissioner Lee. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Atkins. Is there any discussion first?
I'd like to amend that
motion,
thank you, to include the donation toward Relay for Life.
And do we know what amount there we're considering?
Yes, historically it's been $2,000.
Okay, so we're considering that. Won't you add that part to amend to
yes.
include that? Okay, so the it's been amended, the motion, to not only to approve, but to approve the amount, which is $2,000, to Relay for Life. Any discussion? And that was amended by Commissioner Lee, second by Commissioner Atkins. All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Thank you. Thank you. Let's get that to Relay for Life, because I'm sure they're going to need it to go forward with all of their planning. Okay?
And just a note on that, they are planning on having their walk on the 15th of May if things are better and they can go forward with it.
Okay, Sarah, would you put that on our calendar too, the 15th of May, for that Relay for Life walk, please?
No problem.
All right. So now we're going to our discussion agenda. We have four items this evening. The first is budget amendments and updates from our finance director, William Robertson. William, are you there?
I hope so. Can you hear me?
We can. We hear you loud and clear.
Okay. All right. Well, let me go ahead and get started then.
Okay.
First thing I want to try to tackle is the budget amendments. Hopefully in your package you'll see there's two of them. The first one is where we usually get a bill in from the county tax service for the audits for personal property, and they have billed us, and we usually kind of up the revenue and the expense so we can pay this bill. And this is something we've been doing throughout the year. The second one is to set up the budget for the Bertie Martin Regional Jail Feasibility Study, which I approved back on February meeting, and I think you were just asking for some follow-up on how much it was going to cost, and the amount looks like roughly about $75,000, which a third of it's going to be paid by us, so I'm asking for a budget amendment for $25,000.
Okay. All right. Great. Those are the only two amendments, right?
It's the only two amendments I have at this time.
Okay. But tell us a little bit, William, about where we stand in terms of budget, in terms of the impact of the pandemic and all the things here in the county. I mean, what should we be concerned about?
I was going to kind of get into that once I got this out of the way.
Oh, good enough. Go right ahead.
So y'all would like to go ahead and...
Let's go ahead and do the motion on that first, if you'd like. Go ahead.
I make a motion we accept it. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Do you think we need to allow the other commissioners who are on here to opportunity to comment on that before we make a motion to something controversial? I don't think it is, but maybe we need to vote.
Yeah, well, we take the motion and then we'll always open it for discussion. So we can do that. That's normal. So we had the motion. We had a second. So now we want to open that as Commissioner Atkins says. Is there any discussion from any of the commissioners here or on the phone concerning those two budget amendments? Commissioner Trent, Commissioner Bazemore, any questions concerning those two? Sarah, are they unmuted? Commissioner Trent, Commissioner Bazemore?
Oh, I don't have any questions.
Okay. Commissioner Bazemore?
No.
Okay. Great, great. We want to make sure. And anywhere, for both of you guys on the phone, if there are any questions, any place during what we're doing here, please just speak up, chime in. We want to make sure that, you know, even though you're not here physically, you're still a part of the meeting today. Great. So, William, go ahead with the other updates for us.
So, if you took the vote on
now we got a vote on. All those in favor, favor of approving the budget amendments just presented by our finance director, please say aye.
Uh-uh.
All those opposed, nay? Ayes have it. Thank you, William.
Okay, now we'll move on.
Yes, sir.
One of the first things I would like to talk about is your release you done on March 20th, where you stated that the water customers, we were going to waive the convenience fees if they use the credit cards. To date, I have basically have about $2,884. About $1,400 goes to the tax office and about $1,200 goes to the water. I'm bringing it to your attention because I wanted to point out that in your release, it was supposed to run through April the 22nd, which is Wednesday. I kind of guess I wanted to throw it out there. Do you want it to stop then or do you want to extend it?
Yeah, let's try to get some consensus here. We can vote if we need to, but what is your pleasure?
It sounds like the citizens are taking good use of it. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to hurt us to continue as long as we're still in lockdown mode.
That's great. We don't want citizens still to come out here to the building. The building is closed, okay, unless by appointment.
Right.
So I think we need to continue this.
Can I also point out that inside of this, you also stated that there would be no cutoffs or whatever done for 30 days, which also ended on the 22nd. But the governor had a 60-day ruling as of March 31st, and it pretty much will go until the end of May.
Yeah, he trumps us.
There you go.
Yeah, so he trumps us. But he doesn't get to speak about the convenience fee. So that's the reason I wanted to bring it to your attention to kind of get some guidance on what you want to do about that.
Do we need
a motion?
Well, just to be sure. Do we need to give a time frame? Because when is our next meeting? I mean,
May 1st.
Okay, so we'll know whether or not we're still in lockdown after that.
Yeah, or we can make it coincide with the governor's, which is takes us to, when did he say, the end of May?
End of May.
Well, that's for
terminations.
Yeah, but I mean, we can make the fee also coincide with that, so it'll make it easy for citizens to understand. End of May. I don't think we're planning to be probably open that time. We don't have 14 days of declining cases, so we wouldn't be eligible under the guidelines. So that's 14 days. So
not likely.
Okay. Commissioner Trent, Commissioner Bazemore, the thinking here, discussion here is that perhaps we can extend this to coincide with the governor's position that we do this through the end of May. What is your thinking?
Okay.
All right.
I'm thinking if we are still sheltering in place, we need to consider that and work with the citizens.
Right.
So if we are sheltering in place, it doesn't make sense.
Correct.
You know, to go against what we're saying, yeah.
And I think that's what the governor's saying, too, until May, which is extension about sheltering in place goes through the end of May, this would coincide with that. It may be extended there, too, as well. Who knows? But...
Right.
So, I'll offer the motion to the board that we extend to coincide with the governor's standard, if you will, that this goes through the end of May.
Okay. Correct. I'll second. Yeah.
Okay, it's been moved and properly seconded. If there's no further discussion, we'll put that to a vote. Hearing none, all those in favor of extending those deadlines until the end of May to coincide with the governor's proposal or whatever executive order. Thank you. Please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. William, we're going to extend to the end of May.
End of May, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I know I didn't want to have to be calling my credit card company's balance and changing it, so keep it going like we got.
Yes, sir.
Okay. As far as finances, I have pulled property taxes, and as of today, we've collected on ad valorem taxes 94.95%. Our goal from last year was like 96.93%. So we're a little short, but we still got 2.5 months to go. We are still getting payments, and based on what I have received so far, I'm looking at the percentage being roughly 96.4%, with still 2 months to go. So I still think, as far as ad valorem tax is going to be concerned, I think we're going to be right on the money with that, if not a little bit over.
Oh, that's great news. Tremendous news.
The vehicle taxes, we currently have collected 9 out of 12 months, which would basically say we should be around 75%. We're setting at 76.7, so we're a little bit ahead of the game. The estimate from the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners has projected they think April or May may see a 10 to 30% decrease. If something like that was to happen, I think overall we're going to be kind of in the ballpark with vehicle taxes. So I think that one's going to be pretty good as well to finish this year out. The biggest one that people want to talk about is sales tax. At the moment, we have received 7 out of our 12 months, which basically says we should be around 58%. We're setting at 61.5, so we're a little bit ahead of the schedule. Now, the association has given some scary figures out here where they project an April and June sales tax to be anywhere from 10 to 50% reduction. That's pretty steep. I have kind of looked at numbers. If we kind of hit somewhere middle range, like 25% for the last quarter of the year, we'll probably still be in the ballpark of getting what we budgeted. Anything higher than that, we're going to have to start having a shortfall.
Okay.
Looking forward, they say like July and September, they dropped to 5 to 40%, but all this is estimates because they really have no clue what it's going to be like. The biggest thing about sales tax is it usually comes 3 months later. So, like, whatever happened in March, I would not even receive it until June. So, as far as cash flow, it really will not affect me too much until about June or July. But it will be some of the numbers that could affect our bottom line for the year. The other things I looked at that they basically talked about, we don't have occupancy tax, we don't have utilities. I kind of was hoping they were going to delay the increase in the retirement system, but they just put a note in here to remind you that that was going to be an increase this year. So I won't look you on that. But overall, I think as far as the finances are concerned, we're looking pretty good. On the expense side, most of the additional purchases that's been bought, such as PPE equipment and cleaning supplies, has still been done within the allowable amount that was budgeted. If we go through that stuff and need more in the following months, we may run into an issue then. But if we don't use it all and we can get through those months, we'll still be good in that area. What kind of is the overall view? If there's any questions, I try to answer them.
Well, William, I do have one thing that I want. You may not have seen this, William, but I'm going to read most of it from a release that came to us to county commissioners from the National Association of County Commissioners. It says that the National Association, NACO, informed us that a proposal is being forwarded in Congress that would provide $29.5 billion in direct funding to stabilize county governments across the United States. It is being referred to as the COVID-19 3.5 plan. Now, under this plan, North Carolina counties would receive nearly $930 million. And if this is passed, Bertie's portion of this would be $1,680,000. $1,680,000 based on a population of 18,947. So we see how important census is, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It is very important because our budget here in Bertie, as you know, could be significantly hit, as William said, by sales tax. So this has not passed, but this is a proposal that is being considered. And, you know, this would, William, certainly make us whole and then some, perhaps.
Yeah, Chairman, I was on a call on the way here with D.C., with NACO, and they were saying that so far
it's not there
that
yet.
3.5 is not happening. They want us to keep up. They encouraged us to keep up the heat on our legislators. I emailed all three of ours, Representative Butterfield and Vern Tillis, and heard back from all of them. They want us to continue to do that and until they're saying that some counties have not been fiscally responsible and that they don't think the federal government ought to step in and help them. You know, we have been fiscally responsible, and the majority, they were saying the majorities of the counties in the United States have been. It's those few counties that haven't that's going to spoil it for all of us if we don't continue to encourage our legislators to pass that bill.
I think that's exactly right. I think on this next piece of legislation that's likely going to be approved, this may not be in it, the 3.5. But however, I think at some point this may be considered. Governor Cooper is a strong advocate for this. Counties need to be made whole for the impact of the virus, just like businesses and just like everybody else. And if that is not the case, then we are forced to almost to make sure that either we, you know, go into our reserves or we pass that on to our citizens, and we certainly don't want to do that unless we have to. I think I heard, was that Commissioner Bazemore?
Yes. I just wanted to add to it that I was also on the call today about the 3.5 package, and that money was to be used for the hospitals, community, the vulnerable communities, hospital and testing, things like that.
Yeah, there's a piece for
rural hospitals.
Yeah, I think you were correct.
But the vote will take place tomorrow. They're looking at tomorrow for the vote on this.
I think you're right, Commissioner Bazemore. There's a piece for hospitals, but the portion I was referring to, the $930 million, my understanding is that that's just counties. Is that your understanding?
Well, all of it is for counties. I mean, but 3.5 packages for accounts.
Right, but that $930 million is the breakout of the direct portion that would go to counties.
You saw North
Carolina.
Right. Counties in North Carolina. That's correct.
Right. So they broke it out. They show Bertie's portion is 1.68. Yeah, you're right. Maybe part of that is to hospitals. I don't know. But let's hope that can pass, right?
They were saying this evening or this afternoon late on that call that most likely the hospital portion would pass, but the monies coming to the counties would not.
Would not pass.
Not this whole round.
Well, let's be hopeful and see what happens. All right, William.
And I have one more.
Yes,
go one ahead. More.
Go right ahead.
I just received a message from Kevin Leonard, and we are able to vote verbally.
Yeah, I share that. Commissioner,
I have the blog, and I can share it with y'all.
Commissioner,
they changed it for the coronavirus. Yeah.
Okay. Commissioner, I explained that to our attorney here, Jonathan. I have not shown it to him, but I have that same piece. It was his feeling, after discussion with Lloyd, that, you know, there may be some, we're not sure, but it still says that. Jonathan, why don't you step in and make the comment direct? Better you say it than me.
Well, okay. The guidance that I've reviewed in the statutes, they don't make it clear that voting on the phone counts. The in-person voting, we're certain counts, but we're not, it's unclear about whether voting from photo participation will count or not. So as long as, so I'm happy to look at any additional guidance that you've got. I would like to see that, and it's very well could change our opinion. Things change every day.
I will forward it to you now.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Bazemore. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, the next thing on our discussion agenda is the Families First Coronavirus Response Act update by Risk Management Human Resources Director Courtney Ward. Courtney, are you there?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
We can. Thank you.
Great. This evening, I'll be presenting a brief overview of the Family First Coronavirus Response Act and what it means for Bertie County. You all should have a FFCRA flyer included in your packet that has been posted and sent out to all employees informing them of their rights under the FFCRA. This presentation will break this flyer down a bit more to help answer as many questions as possible. Please allow me to direct your attention to the monitor. Back a little bit. There we go. All right. So, the Family First Coronavirus Response Act. Introduction into law. First, before I begin, are you guys able to see the presentation? Is it going with me?
We have copies in front of us, so we're fine.
Okay. Perfect. All right. Introduction into law. On March 17th, 2020, President Trump signed this bill into law to be effective on April 1st, 2020, and is effective through December 31st, 2020. This law covers multiple benefits for active employees as well as unemployed individuals due to COVID-19. Active employees, this new law creates a bit of relief for currently employed individuals that may experience personal COVID-19 related situations and still receive income. There are two separate acts that cover certain circumstances that are eligible for employer paid leave. Those are the Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act, or the EPSLA, and the Emergency Family and Medical Leave Expansion Act, or the EFMLEA. Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act. The purpose for this act is pretty straightforward within its title. This is a benefit to current employees that allows them to receive pay for lost time up to 80 hours due to COVID-19 related circumstances. There are eligibility requirements, which are that the employee has to be employed with Bertie County for at least 30 days. They have to meet one of six qualifying reasons, and they are not able to work remotely, either because they're too ill or their position just does not allow. An employee who's paid under the EPSLA is either paid at 100% of their hourly rate or two-thirds their hourly rate, depending on the reason, and we'll be going over those qualified reasons here shortly. Emergency Family and Medical Leave Expansion Act. This is pretty much an extension of the traditional FMLA. This allows paid leave at two-thirds the employee's hourly rate for 10 weeks, but up to 12 weeks of protected leave for COVID-19 related circumstances. The first 2 weeks are actually unpaid under the EFMLEA, but employees do have the option to utilize the employer paid sick leave paid at two-thirds their hourly rate to cover the first 2 weeks. There are also eligibility requirements for this leave. Again, the employee has to be employed with Bertie County for at least 30 days. They have to meet one of two qualifications under the EFMLEA. They have not yet exhausted all of their traditional FMLA, and again, they don't have the opportunity to work remotely either because they're too ill or the physician just does not allow. Qualifying reasons for leave. Reason number one, employee is subject to a federal, state, or local quarantine or isolation order related to COVID-19. Reason number two, the employee has been advised by a healthcare provider to self-quarantine related to COVID-19. Reason number three, the employee is experiencing COVID-19 symptoms and is seeking a medical diagnosis. Reason number four, the employee is caring for an individual subject to an order described in one or self-quarantined as described in two. Reason number five, the employee is caring for his or her child whose school or place of care is closed or their child care provider is unavailable due to COVID-19 related reasons. Or reason number six, the employee is experiencing any other substantially similar condition specified by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Taking a closer look, if an employee is approved for employer paid sick leave or emergency family medical leave, the employee will be paid 100% of their hourly rate for qualifying reasons 1 to 3, up to $511 a day and $5,110 total. The employee will be paid 2/3 of their hourly rate for qualifying reasons number 4 and 6, up to $200 a day and $2,000 total. And up to 10 weeks more of paid sick leave and extended family and medical leave paid at 2/3 of their hourly rate for qualifying reason number 5, for up to $200 a day or $12,000 total. Also, part-time employees are eligible for leave for the number of hours that they normally are scheduled within the time period that they're requesting. Key point, basically, as a quick breakdown, under the employer paid sick leave, you'll usually find reasons for this leave will be generally for COVID circumstances related to health. Again, this leave is paid at 100% or 2/3 their hourly rate, depending on their qualifying reason, up to 80 hours. Emergency family and medical leave. The reasons for leave would generally have to do with COVID-19 circumstances related to closure, school closures, or unavailable child care. Again, this leave is paid at 2/3 their hourly rate for 10 weeks and up to 12 weeks of protected leave, which can be paid or unpaid. And again, the first 2 weeks are unpaid under the EFMLEA. With both acts, it is required that approved employer paid leave must be utilized before accrued leave. Furloughed employees, this can be viewed as furloughed or having a reduction in force where the employee is temporarily laid off due to lack of work or the employee is placed on staggered schedule, which reduces their hours of meeting full-time qualifications. The Department of Employment Security has waived certain criteria and requirements to be eligible for unemployment with regards to COVID-19 related claims. The federal government has provided additional dollar amount benefit to the traditional unemployment benefit for COVID-19 related claims, and eligible employees would still have to apply for these modified unemployment benefits as they would in any general situation. And employer cost. So as far as the unemployment cost, generally the state would charge the paid out unemployment claim to the county, but for COVID-19 related unemployment claims, the county will not be charged. And for FFCRA paid leave, generally employers have two options for reimbursement. That's tax credit and or employer would not be required to pay Social Security portion of FICA through payroll. The only option we really qualify for is not paying the employer's side of the Social Security portion of FICA while providing this benefit, and this only applies to payment under the employer paid leave, not regular payroll. That's all I have as far as the presentation. Are there any questions I can answer? I know that was a lot of information.
Yeah. Well, it was a lot of information, but I think it's very good information, and I think you made it very clear. I did have one kind of strange question, kind of a corner case, but I know a couple of times when an employee had used up all of their sick leave, other employees were able to donate part of leave to that person. Now, how does that come into play with around COVID?
That's most certainly an option still, but as far as the final ruling and the guidance for the FFCRA with the employer paid sick leave and the expanded family and medical leave, we would still have to provide that employer paid leave before they're able to utilize any shared leave, comp leave, sick leave, vacation leave. We would have to pay first.
Okay, good. All right.
And so this leave terminates in December 31st, correct?
Through December 31st, yes. End of work day, December 31st, yes, ma'am.
Is this going to be a nightmare for you to
Well, I'm working I'm working very closely with payroll, and we're Samantha Ellis, and we're trying to put together a tracking system and forms so that we have a really good grip on anyone who chooses to utilize their right under the FFCRA.
All right, thank you. That's well. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for keeping a close eye on.
Yes, ma'am.
Courtney, we are very, very glad to have you in place. I can tell you that. I think we're in good hands. Thank you.
Well, I'm very glad to be here. Thank you all.
All right. The last piece on our discussion agenda is Census 2020 Update Complete Count Committee Liaison and Planning Director Tracy White. Tracy, you ready for us?
Hello?
Yeah, Tracy, you there?
Okay.
We're good.
Okay. Hope you are having a good day, good evening.
Thank you.
shortly after I was assigned to the Complete Count Committee, the COVID nightmare began, which has definitely changed the way that the committee would work as far as trying to get people out to public functions to encourage them to fill out their census forms. So public events have changed. So we're trying to be creative in coming up with ways to try to encourage people to complete their census. Today, the national response rate is 50.7%, and North Carolina is 46.8%, and Burke T. County comes in at 37.9%. Now, our towns vary. We have them as low as 7.6% up to 57.9% in one of our towns. And I can give you all those town numbers if you'd like for me to.
Sarah could get that information again. She posted it on our Facebook page, the county Facebook page. That was extremely helpful. And so if she could do that again, that would be great.
Yeah.
Sure. We can post the response rate as they change. Most of our towns and the county are creeping up, you know, slowly, but the numbers have come up a tiny bit since Friday. So I think that's good, especially since Friday. We do have a couple of towns that have fairly low response rate that are not changing or have not changed in a while.
Sarah, could we also make sure
we
that
have been talking about the possibility of putting in flyers maybe in school lunches. So it would take some coordination. I know Commissioner Weston, I believe you have worked with that school lunch program, or you may be able to provide some insight on that.
Yeah, it works two ways, Tracy. We could have those flyers available to the parents at the schools when they come to pick up the school lunches, right? That's one way. But the buses are also going out to some of the low-income areas, some of the trailer park and other places, taking lunches, and they could distribute the flyers there as well. But I'm sure that if we had them available to the school, they would make the schools, and there are four of them, they would make sure that they go out with the lunches.
Okay. Would I need to contact the superintendent for that?
Well, you can contact Amanda. What's Amanda's last name?
Bunch.
She is a communications officer. You can work through her.
Okay.
And we also have Dr. Smallwood on the line as well.
All right, great.
Okay.
Dr. Smallwood is...
As in he's listening in, yeah. If I'm not sure if he's prepared to speak, but I can unmute him if you'd like
to. Superintendent, if Amanda's not the right person, no, she's a communication person, just let us know who we need to get it to, and we can do that. Okay.
Yes, Commissioner Weston, yes, Amanda Bunch is the person.
Great. I figured she was. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Amanda is on the Complete Count Committee, and I will be in touch with her about that. We can get the flyers shipped here from the census, so there will be no charge or printing cost on the county part. We've also talked about doing, in an email last week, the possibility of a census parade where we, if anyone we can get from our under-county communities to decorate their car and drive around and blow the horn, you know, just to try to get people's attention and, you know, maybe people that are they're familiar with and used to seeing in their community could, you know, prompt someone to fill out a census form that wouldn't do it previously. Or, and to let people know that they can call in their responses. They don't have to have access to a computer. They can be called in.
Tracy, what about the census bus? Is that bus available to us?
The census bus?
Yeah, there's a bus that they have that, you know, that can go around in the communities and you can actually, you know, update right at the bus. And they'll actually go into communities.
They're doing that now?
Yeah.
Okay, I will ask about that.
Yep, it's right there in this region.
I will ask our census rep about that.
Okay.
There's also a video challenge going on that Sarah has posted on the census Facebook page. A video challenge has up to $30,000 as the top prize. And then there's two $10,000 prizes. One is a student. Specifically for a student. So we're hoping if we can get the word out about that. She posted it, I believe, Friday, and I looked at that today, and I was the first person to like and share it. So if any of you could go up there and like and share it, maybe we can kind of start getting it to rotate around.
I'm looking. It's
And if anybody has any... Sorry.
It's the Berkshire County Census page?
Yes, Sarah set up a Berkshire County 2020 census.
Oh, I see it. Hi.
We've got it. Hey, Tracy.
Right,
I have a question for you, Tracy.
Okay.
I remember when I was asked to do that kind of blast to all citizens prior to census day, I got about 4 calls from people who said they had not received their forms in the mail. So on all 4, I gave them the number that was available, and I do know that 3 of the 4 got back to me and said, yeah, great, I called that number, and I was able to do it directly with them over the phone. But I still didn't understand, are there still mailings to be made? Because I'm not sure why people are not getting the form.
Okay, there was a delay. Okay. With the COVID-19 crisis, there was a delay, and they could be receiving forms in the mail up as long as August. And the door-to-door has been delayed as well. Okay. So, but they can go ahead and fill it out. They don't have to wait for the form.
That's right.
So if they want to go ahead and call the number, that's great. As many people as we can get to call the number or go online and fill out the forms, all they need is their address.
Right. Sir, if there's any way we can publicize that number per se or highlight it so that citizens will know if you have not received your form, you don't have to wait. You can go ahead online or you can go ahead and call that number and get it done. Is that possible?
Sure. Yes, sir.
Okay, and if anybody has any other ideas you want us to explore or me to contact the committee members about, please let me know. We need to be as creative as we can be in trying to reach people because with no contact and no gatherings, it's made it a little more difficult.
We were just kind of, we thought that maybe... Any thought about having a contest between municipalities, you know, with some kind of little prize or, you know, something, whoever did the best got the best percentage of, since we have so many municipalities.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we can look into doing that.
Right. You got any municipalities in mind you want me to contact about it?
Well, I think we should contact all of them and say a competition. Whoever, you know, list the results for all the municipalities and say whoever has the highest percentage as of a certain date is the winner. Maybe that'll, you know, spur a little competition.
Okay. Did you want to do municipalities within the county, right?
Oh, yes, within the county. I mean, nobody wants to be last, you know. Everybody wants to be first, so let's start a little rivalry.
Right. I also contacted all the towns with an email with their response rates. And I listed all the response rates for all our municipalities. So I was hoping that, you know, I would get some feedback from that. I have not yet. If you want me to, I can give you a quick rundown of the percentages of the response rate for our municipality. We got Askeville at 57.9%, which is really high, much higher than the national average. Olander at 15.5%, Coleraine at 40.8%, Kelford at 14.1%, Lewiston Woodville at 13.5%, Powellsville at 7.6%, and Roxville at 21.7%. And all of our communities, aside from Powellsville and Roxville, have increased since I checked the rates on Friday. Those are still the same as they were on Friday.
I think some gentle pushing or maybe that competition might spur a little bit more activity because some of these are very, very low and we really need to get some action there some kind of way, right?
Yes, sir.
Tracy, what was Windsor's? Did I hear Windsor's?
Oh. No. Apparently, I must have left Windsor on for some reason.
Okay.
They're around 47%, I believe. Okay. Hold on, let me check that real quick. I wonder why I left Windsor off.
Like Powellsville, we can spend some Powellsville. No, the mayor there, they got pretty tight.
Well, over here, most of the citizens have a magic of internet.
Oh, I was saying that.
It's terrible.
And Chair Wesson, if I could, while Tracy's looking for that number for Windsor, we did talk about a possible video compilation that we could put together, kind of like what we did for Bertie Beach Day, in a way to get folks who are representatives in their communities to provide a short 30-second video just promoting the census and saying how easy it is this time around to submit it, whether it's on the phone or online. Just folks that people are more familiar with, whether it's in church or it's in, you know, commissioner videos or even county staff videos, just people who have a good visible presence in their communities to just kind of help folks along in encouraging them to complete the surveys as well.
Sir, I know. I think that's a great idea. I think it would be nice to get people from the municipalities, maybe the mayors or someone like that, you know, who people kind of, you know, would listen to perhaps even more so than us, especially some of the individual communities here. The mayors can really make a push, I would think.
Sure. Absolutely.
Worth a shot. All right.
Sorry, for some reason, Windsor won't come up, but I'm gonna check again. I just refreshed my page, so maybe it will come up this time.
And if not, we can just do an update again on Facebook with highlighting all of them.
But when I shared the last Facebook post about it, some of the comments were, okay, folks, let's get busy. One town particularly, I won't name them, but they were calling out their fellow citizens, all right, let's get busy. So, I think the whole contest thing between towns would really be a big push.
Okay, Windsor is 45% today.
45, okay. Good. Still
45.
Still got some work there, too, then. Okay. All right. So we really only have one municipality that's real, real strong. So maybe we can find out kind of if there's, you know, talk to the folks there maybe. What are they doing? I mean, they're doing something right to have almost 58% in Askerville. So, you know. Maybe they've got some ideas.
Right. Okay.
Great. Tracy, thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You know, I skipped one thing on the agenda, and Jody, please forgive me. I know you've been on the line waiting for us, but we do want to get your update and discussion on the 2020 Board of Equalization and Review dates. Jody, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can. Coming through loud and clear.
I didn't know if I was looking at the wrong agenda or not. Skipped right over me. looking at talking about revaluation, we have 19,058 parcels in this county. We had 307 informal appeals. 110 of those came from Scotch Hall. We're still working on those. So if you take those out, we had 197. We have 13 formal appeals, which are requesting to go to the board. We have revaluation coming back in the office tomorrow and reworking those 13 to see if we can narrow that down some without having to go before the board. But based on the informal appeals that we have looked at, we've made changes that have resulted in a negative $970,000 at our current tax rate of 86.5 is $8,387. These are situations where doing a drive-by revaluation, there are things we couldn't see. It could be a one-story house with an attic that has windows in it that looks two-story. The taxpayer contacted us, provided the information. We had to go back and adjust it. I think 106 is what we ended up doing adjustments to. But three of those actually increased at the taxpayer's request, believe it or not. Yeah, we had one lady that was very adamant that wanted her property valued a whole lot higher, and I could not justify going as high as she wanted, but she ended up being happy when we finished. So I'm not going to argue with that.
Where's she trying to sell it?
We've got the Board of E&R scheduled for their first meeting Monday, May the 4th. That is the absolute latest we can meet. And normally in a non-revaluation year, we usually have one meeting to hear appeals. This year we're going to do two. So I've looked at Monday, May the 4th, and Monday, June the 1st. Like I said, right now we have 13 that are proposed to go before the Board of E&R. Tomorrow we're going to work on those and try and get those down. Scotch Hall is a big issue. It is a completely different animal than any other part of the county. I've actually reached out to the assessor in Moore County, where Pinehurst Country Club is located. They have 42 golf courses in a 15-mile radius. The assessor there used to construct golf courses. So I've been leaning heavily on him to help me do appraising this course. I can't say what, you know, we were at 5.5% increase countywide. I can't say what this will do once we finalize it. With this almost $1 million reduction, we're still over 5%. We're going to work on review on these other appeals, but I don't foresee maybe a handful, five or six, that may go in front of the board. Any questions?
Any questions? Jody, I would say just, you know, keep working it, you know, obviously. Let's do the right thing. But what we need to hold fast. If we have some corrections to make, then, you know, those should be made.
Well, it is, and that's, you know, that's kind of the assessor's motto, is to be fair and equitable, and that's what we want to be. If, you know, even though the informal appeal process is over, somebody can still come up and appeal prior to the board adjourning. And the statutes allows me to adjust those values prior to the first meeting of the Board of ENR, which is on May the 4th. So I'm still able to make some adjustments if necessary before we have our first meeting. I just don't think there's going to be that many. Again, fair and equitable is what we're looking at. We did a drive-by appraisal. There are a lot of things we can and cannot see. So we've had several people that called and have pointed out things that we've had to go back and relook at, especially the waterfront property. If you lived on the cliff, a lot between Bachelor's Bay and Coleraine Beach, there are a lot of areas that are on cliffs. If you drive by on the road, you can't see the docks, the piers, the bulkheads, that sort of things. So we've actually picked up some areas that we missed by doing a drive-by, approximately $300,000 in value. But people call in and tell us certain things that, you know, you may have a house that looks nice and neat from the outside, but we can't see on the backside of the house that the roof has fallen in, there's mold, there's mildew, there's foundation or structural issues. And that's what we rely on the taxpayer to tell us. And we go back and we look at it and make the adjustments as necessary. So when somebody appeals, we do take it serious and we look at it. And if they want to take it further, then they'll take it to the board and go from there.
I've only had a few citizens to contact me, and the ones that have, I've directed them to you and told them, you know, that you would take a look at it. So I'm sure you've gotten some of those phone calls.
I have, and like I said, if you take out Scotch Hall and you look at 197 appeals out of 19,000 parcels, that is not bad at all. And when I say Scotch Hall, I'm talking about the actual development, not individual properties that have been sold and bought, but lots that are still unsold and the actual golf course itself. And we're working with them and trying to come up with an agreed value for that.
Yeah, that's an important distinction, Jody, that you're talking about the complex itself and their properties as opposed to dealing with individual tax holders. Yes.
Right. And we have some that, you know, you're going to have, I'm going to assume maybe four or five that go to the board. I think the rest of them we can resolve ahead of time. But the thing to remember is we do a countywide mass appraisal. We are not doing a single property appraisal like you would if you're refinancing your house or purchasing a house and the bank hires an appraiser to go out. They're going to look at your house. They're going to look at least three comparable properties. We don't do that. We look at countywide mass appraisal. And a lot of people have a hard time understanding that. And some people are comparing their house value by square footage and looking at other houses, price per square foot. And you can't do that. I've got one that has a very nice house that's trying to compare it by square footage to a house that's honestly should be condemned, and you can't do that. And I have people who also look at Zillow, Trulia, Remax, all these online companies that said, this is what my house is valued. And my first question to them is, who from Zillow came and looked at your house? Nobody. They use algorithms. They use data from my office, from the Register of Deeds office, and they throw a value out there, and they actually have a disclaimer that says that, but we have people that bring that up. And that may occur if somebody goes in front of the board that Zillow says my house is worth X amount. But it all goes back to what I said earlier of being fair and equitable. So if there's people out there listening that have an issue with their value, you know, contact us, let us know. You know, what it just don't come in and say my house is worth X amount. We've spent over 2 years doing market research to come up with these values. So provide us with something. What is your opinion of value and what do you have to back up your value?
Good. It's good instruction, Joey. Good instruction. Thank you.
All right. Yes, sir. Any other questions?
Any others?
Thank you, Joey.
Before you go, we just need to finalize the date, the proposed date of May 4th for the Board of ENR to convene.
Okay. Let's just get a consensus. On the phone, Commissioner Trent and Bazemore, May 4th, and that's a regular meeting day?
Yes.
So are we good with that date?
Yeah.
John says yes. Commissioner Bazemore?
Yes. Yes, May 4th.
May 4th on our regular meeting. All right, here, present?
I'm good.
I see, yes. Yes, Jody.
I'll be.
May 4th is good.
I will be able to update you prior to that meeting as far as how many appeals may be happening. We, like I said, we went to January 1st. We had May 4th and January 1st at the two meetings. If an appeal is filed timely while the board is in session, the board can continue to meet to hear those appeals after it has adjourned. Now, in a revaluation year, the statutes give us until December. We're not going to have to go to December. We can resolve this before this budget year is over, which I know is what we want to do. So before May the 4th, I'll be able to provide y'all with how many number of appeals that we'll be hearing, and we can go from there to see if we need to schedule more meetings or not.
Great. Thank you, Jody. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. So that concludes our discussion agenda. Next on the agenda is commissioners' reports. So I'm going to start first with our two commissioners on the phone to give them an opportunity. First, Commissioner Trent, sir. Any comments?
How y'all doing?
Doing good, John.
Is Mitch still on the line?
He should be. Mitch, you there? Mitch, are you there?
I'm here.
He's there, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mitch, I just had a quick question in reference to what I'm getting ready to say. Did I understand Dr. Lowry to say that it could be possibly 30 to 40% people that are asymptomatic, no symptoms, but they are affected by the coronavirus?
Yes, sir. We are starting to see a trend where people are not showing symptoms that are carrying the virus.
Would that be safe to say if there was 10 people, that would be 3 to 4 people out of 10?
Yes, sir. And that's why he was talking about more testing. And we're trying to get a grasp on what the new guidance is going to be from CDC. But I do think that we're going to see an increase in testing as long as the supplies are available where we can test more people.
Then I guess my comments to you as a commissioner is that we got 3 to 4 people out of 10 that could possibly be asymptomatic and not show symptoms but be infected. I mean, that puts us in a kind of a binding situation. And like Commissioner Bazemore was saying about voting and things of that nature, you know, I think that what we're doing now is what we should be doing is by phone. The other circumstance is this. I'm sorry?
No, I was just agreeing. Great.
You're disagreeing about what?
She is agreeing. Okay. Agreeing, not disagreeing. Agreeing.
Agreeing with you.
I couldn't hear. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
All right. Well, anyhow, my point of contention is this, that everybody needs to be careful. We need to be out, again, social distancing, things of that nature. I mean, I heard those numbers, it was quite staggering, okay? And I wanted to make sure I was clear on that. And I think that we as commissioners need to start looking at that also.
Great. Good. All right, John. Anything else?
That's it.
All right. Commissioner Bazemore.
Yes. When Tracy White was speaking, I was trying to add my 3 cents, and I was muted. And I just wanted to say, for that, I do believe the robocall worked very well. So we could do that ever so often. That would be good for someone to send a blast out to the community. Also, I checked and I sent out the blog that under the state of emergency, we are allowed to vote verbally while we are under the state of emergency. Okay. And I sent the information to the attorney and our county manager.
And I think if you look at Martin County, they did also.
And Washington County.
Yep.
And I also want to ask, has anyone in the Council on Aging Department reached out for any funds? Because there are $240 million available for the families, the emergency funding for the aging. And they have a special group where they will send out PPE equipment to those who need it, with a special population. So there's a resource for Council on Aging.
And Commissioner Bazemore, you know, you spoke to me, I think, about a week or so ago, and you were talking about Wheels on Wheels, and in one particular area that was not getting meals, the understanding had been that there was nobody to deliver to that area, but you found that there were people interested. I passed that information on to the Mideast Commission, and they were supposed to be contacting our director here to tell her that the dollars are available. All we need is an identified person. I even gave the name of the person that you gave me, that if that person is willing, the funds are available. So there's
no excuse. Yes, they have someone ready.
Okay, there's no excuse. So if they have somebody ready, the funds are available, we can add that community receiving Meals on Wheels. So let's follow up. I'll follow up and make sure these people are contacted, okay?
That's perfect. And the last piece, those who have small businesses which hire anywhere from 3 to 20 people, they can go to the website savesmallbusinesses.com and apply for a grant, but it's only for small businesses, and they must be located in a economically vulnerable county, and that is certainly Berkeley County.
Sure.
And they have to be harmed financially by the COVID-19 pandemic.
Outstanding.
Okay, that's all I have right now.
Yeah, Commissioner Bazemore, we might want to get that on to our county website as well. So let's make sure that Sarah gets that information. We can post that to any business owners too, okay?
Sure.
Great. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Anything else?
No, I'm finished. Thank
okay.
you.
Commissioner Atkins. Okay. Commissioner Lee.
Just great progress on the Tri-County Airport. The new terminal building is coming along. As far the last I heard, we were on schedule. So the weather and the COVID-19 pandemic has not affected Tri-County Airport new terminal. So thankfully, this afternoon got an email from Director of Intergovernmental Affairs with the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, and some more great news for our food-deprived individuals in Berkeley County. We are excited to share that North Carolina just received approval for the Pandemic Electronic Benefits Transfer Program to help more families purchase food during COVID-19 pandemic. It's going to be through their EBT card, So they'll be receiving more money to help. It's going to, and it has, they have to have school-aged children, so it's affecting 800,000 school-aged children. And I'll send this information to Sarah so she can post it.
Great. Okay. I just have a couple of comments. First, talking about hunger and food, you will see in this Thursday's paper, I believe, well, I put it, you will see an article that's coming out very shortly that Youth Bertie Incorporated, the backpack program, just received a grant from the Albemarle Area United Way for $12,500. And that's significant. We only have two grants, one from Vidant Foundation and last year, first one from United Way, which was $7,500. But now to receive a grant of $12,500 is going to help us significantly because we're spending a lot of money in our budget this year with the new program that's getting it to the schools and getting it on buses, taking it, our backpacks to communities direct. So this is going to help us eliminate our backlog of kids who have been approved for weekend meals. So that's exciting for us. I wrote out a quick little statement. I just want to read it quickly to the citizens more than anything else. As one of your elected officials here and as chairman of this body, my hope this evening is that it is well for you and your family. As we all struggle with the demands of responding to this pandemic, our hope is that you will be cautious, that you will be alert to dangers, but that you will not be overcome by fear. You know, my wife, who is a psychiatrist, reminds her patients and even me that, yes, we must be vigilant in protecting ourselves from dangers, but that the greater danger would be to allow ourselves to be overwhelmed by fear. Uncontrolled, irrational fear can be more dangerous to our society than any virus. Remember, citizens, that we are Bertie strong and that this too shall pass. So please stay at home, stay safe, and may God continue to bless each and every one of you. Thank you. County Manager, any remarks?
Yes. I just want to first make sure that the public, those attending virtually, are aware that that wasn't me crying when I was being sworn in. I'm well aware of what I'm getting into. You know, Shirley Chisholm has a quote that says, service is the rent that we pay for the privilege of living on this earth. And I'm so honored, I'm so grateful to be walking in my purpose of being a public servant and to be able to serve in a community that's like home to me and my family. So I'd like to take this time to say thank you to each of the commissioners for entrusting me with this responsibility. I'd like to thank the citizens of Bertie County for their support and for complying with the stay-at-home order right now. Please continue to stay home, and while you're there, please, please, please take the time to complete the 2020 census. This is a challenging time, but we will get through this together. I'm also so grateful to have such a dynamic staff. I truly believe we have some of the best local government employees right here in Bertie County. And lastly, I'd like to thank my wife, Austin, and my baby girl, Alexandra, who was, you all just heard a little while ago. I thank them for being here and for their love and support. And I have so many family members and friends who would have been right here had it not been for this pandemic that we're experiencing. So I thank them for their love and support as well. And I just look forward to many accomplishments within the next 4 years.
Thank you. Thank you, County Manager. Our County Attorney's report. Jonathan?
No reports.
Okay. Now, we want to make sure that we do this correct. Sarah, I need your help on this. So citizens on the phone, this is the public comment section. Time for you if you have any questions at all. What you need to do is just get your questions to Sarah. I think you can do that by email or text. Sarah, why don't you give the instructions? You're probably a little better at this than me.
Sure, no problem. Folks are aware that if they are using the online Zoom platform, that they can submit their questions in the chat feature. So that is something I've been reminding them about throughout tonight's meeting. And then I actually put out a Facebook post just to see if there was anyone that did have a public comment that they would like to submit or a question. At this time, Mr. Chair and other members of the board, I don't have any questions. I did receive some positive feedback about how the county has been notifying citizens of the latest updates and thanking our entire staff for their hard work. But at this time, I don't have any questions or further public comments.
Thank you, sir. I want to give it just a few moments, just a few more, in case there are any questions. I know it's tough sometimes, you know, staying on the phone for the whole call. But if there are any citizens who still have questions, not too late, get those to sir. We want to be able to address any concerns that you might have. Okay, and if any come in later or whatever, it still can get them to us. We'll still, you know, want to make sure that we try to respond. But if there are any questions now in this comment section, again, please get those to Sarah in the next minute or so.
Hello?
Okay, anything? None? Sarah?
No, sir. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I did have one that popped up.
Great.
What is the process to have demolished property removed?
Well, demolished property removed. I'll let the county attorney respond to that.
Could you repeat the question? Demolished property?
Yes, the process of getting demolished properties removed.
Correct.
Is it in the township, or, you know, if it's in a municipality, right, then it's the responsibility of the municipality, I would think. But if it's in the county, then that would be the responsibility of the county. Is that?
Is the development
did clarify that it's related to the county and how this may or may not affect the property value.
Well, if it's a demolished property, like say a house, has been torn down, but it's just the debris still sitting there. Okay, so and if it's on private property, is the person asking the owner of the property, or is it the next door neighbor who doesn't like what's next to them?
I think the question is, John, that probably the citizen's concerned that a neighboring property or a property in close proximity, that property might be impacting, they believe, their values.
Right.
And what is the county's response to that? You know, either it's lowering their property value or whatever.
Well,
that's correct. That is correct, what they're asking.
I don't think we have any ordinances about private property, do we, in terms of...
Right. Unless it's a nuisance,
right,
or something. Yeah, the word nuisance was one thing I was thinking of. Some towns might have some zoning ordinances if it's in a town,
right,
where the town council can have the inspector come and if there's a building code inspection, if there's rats and vagrants and a health issue. There's certainly things both in the town and the county, if it's a health issue, that steps can be taken. And it would be a matter of going through, like for instance, if there's an empty pool or an open well that hasn't been filled in, there is a way to go through that through the health department.
Yeah.
And then through the county itself.
And sir, I don't know, and I'm not going to ask this citizen to necessarily identify themselves, but it was brought to our attention during the week of a citizen who sent me some pictures of a property, and it was the county's property that was in disrepair, and it bordered on this citizen's property, and they wanted us to take a look at it to see if we could demolish it or get rid of it. Simply because it's an eyesore, right? It wasn't a question about taxes or values, but certainly it was an eyesore to their property. And I brought that to the attention of the county manager, and I know we're looking at that to see if it's something that we need to repair or something that we need to tear down, because that's the county's property, right?
Right.
But I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, that we have any ordinance in place around private property in the county other than health related or some nuisance kinds of things, right?
Yeah, yeah. It would have to be like under the health related statutes. I know there's one that addresses open pools and open wells, but a dilapidated house or a house that's partially falling down, there aren't any ordinances countywide that would really address that.
Okay. Sir, I would like to say to this citizen, if they could give the county manager a call and give us more specifics on this, we can certainly get a more definitive answer, whether that's bringing the tax appraiser, tax administrator in, or if that's legal in, to look at the specific situation. So I don't want to give an incomplete answer. I think we've given all that we really know at this point without more information. But if that citizen would please contact Juan Vaughn II, our county manager, with more detail, and we'll be more happy, and we'll be happy to look into this further. All right?
Yes, sir. No problem. Mm-hmm.
Great. Any other questions?
I have not received any other public comments, either through the Zoom chat feature or our Facebook post.
Great. Thank you, sir. I do believe that we do have a closed session. Is that correct? And could you give us the details about that? That's closed session pursuant to
North Carolina General Statute 143-318.1186.
Okay. So I would ask for a motion to close, not to close this meeting, but to go into closed session.
I make a motion we go in closed session pursuant to that general statute.
Second. Been moved and properly seconded to go into closed session. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nays? Ayes have it. Thank you, citizens. We're going to come back out of closed session to anyone to call back in, but that concludes our meeting to this point. Thank you.